Sean McKindo, you know him as Down Goes Brown on Twitter. Talk to him in just a second. He ranked the greatest Maple Leafs GMs from worst to best. And there's a couple of interesting ones on the list. Oh, and he joins us right now. Hello, Sean.
How are you?
I'm doing rather well. I think the biggest takeaway for me in your breakdown of the best and worst GMs in Toronto Maple Leafs history is how high up the list you had John Ferguson Jr. That you had him at number 11.
This one was a little bit depressing to write as a Maple Leafs fan. I won't deny it. The fact that John Ferguson Jr. barely cracked the bottom five. Now, in fairness, the guys ahead of him, there was one guy who was fired before he even made it to one game, another guy who only lasted 1 year. So, I think that the case is there to be made. John Ferguson Jr. held the job for 5 years. And this, really, this what I'm about to say is very depressing, so I won't mind if people want to cover their ears or turn on the radio for a few seconds. John Ferguson Jr. has the second highest winning percentage any Toronto Maple Leafs general manager in history. And I'm just going to assume, I haven't looked at the numbers any further. I'm just going to blame the loser point and assume that this is all somehow Gary Bettman's fault, because my brain cannot get wrapped around that particular scenario. But at the end of the day, obviously, we could pick apart a whole bunch of moves that John Ferguson Jr. made and the way that era kind of transitioned from legitimate Stanley Cup contenders to a team that was very much not that. But the reality is, you look at his record, he didn't have any real terrible seasons. He didn't have any of those kind of last place years that an awful lot of other people who've run this team have had. Anyone who has followed my work knows I haven't been super kind to John Ferguson Jr. over the years, but I just couldn't really find a logical reason to get him any lower on that list.
This is as nice as you've been to him, perhaps, but I would argue, so you mentioned Howie Meeker, who did not GM for a single game. His record, not applicable. Signature move, none. He was the GM very briefly. I would argue that that's not bad. Like, you didn't do any damage to the organization. I would argue that, I would rank him higher than John Ferguson Jr. Yeah, okay, the record, sure. The winning percentage, I get it. But yeah, the moves, Sean.
First, do no harm. Yeah, I think if I had taken that approach, Howie Meeker, who did not last a single game, would probably have wound up maybe closer to the middle of the list. And I think, I don't know, that might have just depressed me even further.
So this is all obviously in relation to Kyle Dubas being named the next general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think, for me personally, my takeaway and the way the public's perception has either, I think, shifted. I was already in this camp because Justin Bourne, of course, knows him really well, and we have him on every week, and he's given us some insight and told us right away that he's not a nerd. So I knew he wasn't a nerd, but I feel like, Sean, that's a narrative that is now getting around hockey, that, like, oh, they look at him, and maybe this isn't even fair of John Chayka, but they look at him as, like, this guy with a pocket protector and a calculator, and everything's numbers, numbers, numbers. He's a big-time nerd. But no, it's not really that, and I feel like I think people are starting to come to that understanding about him.
Yeah, I hope so, and because, I don't say this lightly, but if that's the picture that someone is painting, I think that's pretty lazy. I think just because somebody is young and wears glasses does not mean that they're one of the computer boys. It doesn't mean that they're all in on analytics. In fact, I don't know. I mean, go and run a Google search for photos of Kyle Dubas and try to find one where he's not sitting at a rink somewhere. It's pretty tough to do. That seems to be, this guy, seems to basically be a rink rat who's always there watching somebody play or watching somebody practice or scouting or talking to somebody. So, certainly he is a guy who understands and can incorporate analytics and can understand and incorporate some of the more modern ideas. And that's absolutely what you want. I don't think we're in anywhere near an era where you want somebody who's old school and does everything based on the eyeball test. But I think anyone who's trying to sell you on Kyle Dubas being a guy who's working with spreadsheets and numbers and formulas instead of going out and quote unquote watching the games, they frankly either have no idea what they're talking about, or they do, and they're just trying to sell you a narrative that fits some other purpose.
I know what you meant by not selling him as a nerd numbers wise, but painting the picture that he's only ever at a rink like Saturday sitting at the hockey rink, the traditional nerd picture is still being painted there.
Yeah, that is possible. He's a hockey nerd. Yes, that's a big important difference. Distinction. Yeah,
he's not a numbers nerd. No, he's a hockey nerd. So we talked to Doug McLean about this earlier, and I think we're all trying to project our own sensibilities onto the Mark Hunter situation, right? Like, would you be able to, one, get over being passed over for your dream job, and two, the guy that got it is like 20 years your junior. How would you deal with that? I don't know. I don't know. I guess part of it is I don't know what the options are for Mark Hunter. I don't know what this organization is going to do to maybe make it worth his while. Maybe, you know, money is a great cure-all, Sean. I assume you know that.
I've heard.
Yeah. So maybe you throw a couple extra ducats at Mark if you really, really do believe he's been integral in the player evaluation part of where the Maple Leafs have gone over the last couple of years. It seems that way. I quite enjoy the work of Mitch Marner, and I think that's mostly Mark Hunter. What do you see happening here with him in this organization?
Well, I mean, I certainly hope he stays. And, you know, as a fan, clearly what they had over the last few years seemed to be working. And obviously we don't know what was happening internally. We don't, you know, I'm sure there were arguments. I'm sure there were clashes that we never heard about. But it seemed like the group approach was working well. And, you know, in theory, at least, all of those same names and same voices are still there with some different titles. Now, you will have to wait and see on Lou Lamoriello. I think most of us assume that this will be a similar situation in New Jersey, where he finds something else and goes and does that. But maybe not. Mark Hunter, I mean, look, at the end of the day, what I hope as a fan is that Mark Hunter can be convinced to stay and be convinced to want to stay, not just because they threw more money at him, or not just because there weren't other options out there, but that he can be convinced to buy into Kyle Dubas and to his vision and to get into keeping, you know, keeping this team moving forward and continuing the work that he's done. And if that can be the case, then great. And if that means that there have to be some tough conversations behind closed doors, then you know what? That's part of this business, and that should happen. But I hope he sticks around ultimately because he wants to stick around. I think if somebody is still there, but they're still there against their will and they're sour about it, then, you know, maybe at some point it's better to make a clean break now and everybody move on and on to bigger and better things versus sticking around in a situation that can't work. But, you know, I hope from the outside, not knowing what kind of conversations are happening there, I do really hope that they can figure out a way to make it work, because I think that would be ultimately what would be best for this franchise going forward.
And the Leafs don't really need any more drama, right? Like, the whole organization is one that kind of holds their cards tight to their vest. They like to just have things on the up and up, very professional approach on all facets. So to have some kind of conflict or perceived conflict in the front office to go along with this Babcock Matthews narrative, it wouldn't be a good look for them. And now you have Babcock doing interviews saying, you know, I went to visit some key pieces on our team, whether it was Frederik Andersen, saw him in Denmark, whether it was Arizona with Austin Matthews. I don't know whether that was calculated or that's just something that he wanted to do, but it's those relationships that need mending, and that narrative can only take away from what the Leafs are trying to do on the ice.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, drama is never good for an organization. It can be good, certainly, for the media that covers that organization. In some cases, it can be more fun for the fans. But, you know, I think as far as the mission of building a winner, the less of that, the better. And that's Toronto's a tough market to pull that off in. And to their credit, you know, for the most part, the Leafs, the last couple of years have been remarkably drama-free, especially compared to some of the stuff we've seen here over the years. And, you know, that's full credit to everyone in that front office, especially Lou Lamoriello. We know how he feels about this sort of thing. But at the same time, you almost kind of get a sense that maybe among some of the fan base, maybe among some of the media, there's this pent-up feeling of, okay, like, when do we get our drama bomb? When can we get back to making a big deal out of what color hat somebody wore, or, you know, reading somebody's body language and or some off-season comment and trying to psychoanalyze and all of that stuff. And you hope that this stuff doesn't open the door to that coming back, because as much fun as it might be for somebody like me to write about that stuff, I think if your ultimate goal is to get a Stanley Cup back into parading downtown Toronto, I don't think that sideshow stuff helps anyone get that done.
Yeah, I mean, and I get why we haven't seen the last couple of years. Obviously, 2 years ago, everything was gravy. And this year, right, okay, they were up, they had a tough seven-game series against the Boston Bruins, who I think most people just, if you evaluate the two rosters and the way the two teams played this season, you would have said, yeah, the Bruins beating the Maple Leafs in seven games, that makes sense. I think next year, though, Sean, like, the possibility exists for a lot of drama, and we're already starting to see some of the Matthews leak stuff, right? Like, if Matthews does not have an Austin Matthews-type start or something, like, that next year is the first true year where not that expectations weren't huge this year, but they're massive next year, especially if they do something big in the offseason.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, Kyle Dubas is kind of coming into this at I won't say the worst possible time, but at a very challenging time, because You're right. I mean, the 3 years ago, the last place season, hey, we all knew what was up. We all knew what that was about. You were doing that partly for the lottery odds. You win the lottery, great. Last year, I remember writing even a few months into the season that last year was the fun year. Last year there was no pressure. If they made the playoffs, great. If they didn't, great. This year, a little bit more pressure. Had a good season, set the franchise record for points, but even then, not only the way it ended against Boston, but the way the playoffs have gone since then, right? Because, I mean, you lose in seven games to Boston, you say, okay, Boston's a really good team. Then you see Boston go out there and just get stomped by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you think, maybe we're further away than we thought. And then you see the Lightning go out, and they're getting stomped by the Capitals, and you're thinking, geez, maybe maybe we're flattering ourselves a little bit. So, yeah, you're right. If there's a slow start next year, even if there's not, even if this team comes out next year and takes that next step and they're a 110-point team or 112 points, as soon as they get into the playoffs, if things go south again, if there's more blown leads, if there's another seven-game series and they don't go through, you're right. I mean, this, whether you call it drama or criticism or, whatever it is, this is the time where that kicks in. And they've made the progress much faster than any of us thought, but progress still needs to be progress. And if you stall out, people are going to let you hear about it.
Thanks, Sean. Got to run.
Thank you, guys.